I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. In the lead-up to the 2021 Canadian federal election, CGRU reached out to each candidate running in the Toronto Centre riding. Today, Peter Stubbins of the Animal Protection Party of Canada discusses his experience in federal politics, his platform, and the key issues driving his campaign.
My name is Peter. My last name is Stubbins. It's S-T-U-B-B-I-N-S, Stubbins. This is the Animal Protection Party of Canada. My first degree was in environmental studies, ecology at the University of Toronto, and then my second degree was physiotherapist. So I worked for 36 years as a physiotherapist and recently retired, but my wife and I are business people, and I've been a municipal politician, and I've run for the Green Party several times. So I've been a political ecological activist for about 50 years. So I'm a business person, a physiotherapist, and an ecological activist, and I've been a politician. So I bring a lot of experience to the table, and I know what I'm talking about.
Stubbins describes how he became a politician, tracing back to over 30 years of focusing on ecological issues affecting Canada. Before the 2019 election, he was a longtime member of the Green Party, but decided it was time to change party affiliation when he said there was a change in the Green Party's focus.
Well, I've always been interested in ecological issues. So, you know, I realized, well, what do I do? Do I become a research scientist, or I get involved in the public forum? And the public forum is, politics is an important place to get into, because when I was a municipal politician, I had people working with me or under me or for me as in the municipality that I was living in. And so then I could have a bigger impact. So I was challenging the development industry about where they developed. And so I was trying to protect forests and wetlands and rivers. And at the same time, I was also involved with developing some of the first recycling programs in Ontario. So, I mean, that's why I got involved in politics, because if you want to get some action, you can get action in politics, you can get action in business, or you can get action as an activist or a research scientist. But I chose the political route. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at your candidate profile right now on your party's website, and you've mentioned that you've ran for the Green Party before and you declined a request to run for them in 2019. Why did you decide to make the change in your party affiliation?
Well, going back, this is quite interesting. Going back to, you know, I was the first member of the Green Party of Canada that elected to any level of government back in 1988. So, you know, anyway, I have a long history with the Green Party, but back in the late 80s, I went to the first gathering of the Greens, the International Greens in Amherst, Massachusetts, and I expressed a concern that I was happy to see the party was neither right nor left, but they were moving forward. That was their slogan. So they weren't playing left-right politics. They were a party very much about the issue of ecology and equity. And but slowly they morphed, and they, under the tutelage of Annamie Paul, they become very much what we call a identitarian or a social justice party, and they've lost some of their voice, or a lot of their voice, about ecological issues. And so, and fair enough, Annamie Paul won the leadership fair and square, but even before she became the leader of the party, I declined in 2019. It was probably about 6 months or 7 months before she became the leader, and Elizabeth May stepped down. So anyways, the party has a pretty big, expensive social justice or social programming, and very expensive. And we're at a nexus right now, and we're a nexus in this sense, is that we have to decarbonize our economy, And in the process, it's going to cost a lot of money. The grid, all the charging stations, the retrofits, plus all the other things that need to be done to decarbonize. At the same time, the Green Party is promising a whole lot of very expensive programs, like the universal basic income program, the one based in Hamilton that was cut by Doug Ford about a year or so ago. So it costs anywhere from $95 to $190 billion a year to run that program, depending on how generous the payouts were. So, you know, it sounds good to talk about a universal basic income, but nobody in the world, there's no jurisdiction in the world that has a UBI. And so I just said to myself, well, what we're called the Green Party, and we were a party of ecology. And I have no problem with social justice issues, but, you know, we got away from them. And I said, no more, I'm out. And so does that help you out? Understand a little bit of reason why I would leave them? It was a long, slow process that I left them. But I ran for them three times, mm-hmm. once federally and twice provincially in 2011, 15, and 14. So I know the party inside out. I know Mike Schreiner. I know Elizabeth May. And I know our enemy. I talked on the phone. She's a very articulate person, and she's got great credentials. But I don't like her messaging in the direction she's pushed the party. And she's actually run the party into the ground because their donations are dropping. The membership is dropping. They're not even running a full slate of candidates the first time in probably 15 years. They haven't run a full slate of candidates across Canada. But those are Annamie Paul's decisions, and my decision was to come to Toronto Centre and run with a message about, well, you can see my profile, and you can see the profile of the party. So.
Yeah, for sure. I guess for now, can you talk to me more about the Animal Protection Party and why you decide to run in Toronto Centre?
Yeah, the Animal Protection Party, they've been around for a short period of time, and they morphed out of the Animal Alliance, which is like a not-for-profit group. There's a plethora of animal advocacy organizations in Canada, everything from PETA to the Canadian Association for the Ethical Treatment of Animals and the Animal Alliance and the Humane Societies, etc. So anyways, the Animal Alliance decided they wanted to run federal candidates. So we're probably only running about 20 candidates across Canada. And so they wanted to get their messaging out because they were disillusioned, like myself, with the Green Party's messaging. Because the Green Party won't talk about, like, for instance, the effect of animal agriculture on greenhouse gas emissions and then on other environmental issues. You know, I mean, they go to Lake Erie. It's Lake Erie every summer as algae blooms, and that's largely from agriculture that's developed to feed animals, the corn crops and the other crops, but especially the corn crops. They're heavily fertilized, and it runs into Lake Erie. So the Green Party doesn't want to talk about like issues like that. They don't want to talk about population growth. And if you're serious about talking about ecology, you have to talk about population growth, because population biology is such a huge part of ecology. And you can't ignore these things, but they don't want to talk about them, so that's fair enough. So I joined a party that will talk about those issues, and you'll see that on their profile and on my profile. So does that help you out a little bit? So anyways, I mean, I wanted to come down here and give a green message and let other Greens know across Canada that there's an old Green Party member that isn't going to put up with Annamie Paul's leadership style or leadership message and the way that she's change the party. And so what better thing can I do than come and run down in her riding? So that's why I'm here, frankly.
Mm-hmm. So why, like, other than I guess challenging Annamie Paul, why would you want to represent the residents of Toronto Centre?
Affordable housing is something that I label personally as a big issue for young people and older people, very old people, all kinds of people. It's a big issue. And so in this riding, affordable housing is a mega issue, and the availability of housing. So I say very clearly, there's three things that have to happen. First of all, there has to be the end of foreign ownership and speculation in the Canadian residential housing market. Secondarily, then the universities, like your university in UT in York, the colleges, George Brown, Sir Stanford Fleming, all the colleges, Humber, they have to start providing residents on their campuses, especially for their international students, because there's about 630,000 international students come to Canada every year, but they coalesce around universities and colleges, obviously, and they compete out in the market for apartments and, you know, rental accommodation. So like last year, because there was fewer immigration numbers were lower, and because there was fewer international students because of COVID, the rental market sort of calmed a little bit. And so, but the other parties won't talk about this stuff because then they appear to be xenophobic. And I'm not a xenophobe. I'm an ecologist. I'm a science. I think scientist as a scientist and a business person in my mind. And so I'm just going, when you have that many new Canadians coming into, especially Toronto Center, there's a lot of new Canadians coming here. A lot of refugees and family class immigrants are coming to this riding, and you know, just go up to St. Jamestown, and you'll see. But anyways, nonetheless, there's not enough housing, and so it's just to me disingenuous for our governments to be, welcoming all the foreign students, the international students, and the number of immigrants coming in. And there's not enough housing, and they're not building enough housing. So some people think, well, you could just increase the supply of housing. But you know what? I mean, it takes a long time to build one of these towers down here. And it's pretty, this is the most, the densely populated riding in Canada, Toronto Center. And it's, you know, it's pretty built up. But, you know, but there's not enough towers. And, you know, so if you're going to invite people, you should have housing. But a lot of, you know, civil society groups outside of the city and in the suburbs, they're fighting the development, right? They're fighting the towers to be built. And they're fighting out beyond Vaughan and the city limits. They're fighting the development of subdivisions out, way out there. So there's two forces that are opposition. We got the government on one hand welcoming 450,000 new people every year into Canada, plus all the foreign, the international students. And at the other time, we got people that go, well, we don't want new towers in the Eglinton and Yonge area. We don't want densification of Leaside and East York and Willowdale and places like that, and then beyond the city. So I think, is that clear about there's a contradiction there? There's a So it's a paradox, and I'm just trying to point out there's a paradox, and we need to address that. We just can't continue on thinking that all's okay, because not all's okay. And this affordable housing thing is probably one of the most poignant cases of not all's okay. So that would be what I would say to the people of Toronto Centre. And then the other issues too is the state of the biodiversity of our country. And the increasing the temperatures of our climate, those are things that affect Toronto Center. These heat islands like Toronto are going to get worse. And like Vancouver, how many hundreds of people died during that heat dome over Vancouver last summer? A lot. Like there was a couple hundred people died, and so it's going to get worse. So unless we start pulling back on our CO2 emissions and our methane emissions and other greenhouse gases that come from refrigerants and air conditioners, these problems are going to get worse. So what I would say to the people of Toronto Centre is you need affordable housing. You've got too much demand, not enough supply. And we need to decrease the demand. And then I would say the ecological issues that they, you know, Canada, the big consumers of energy and materials. And so anyways, these things will affect us by the loss of biodiversity and the increasing temperatures. So, and then, you know, there's a lot of First Nations people down here. And so, you know, I'm very aware of that. And that's a big piece of our social justice issue, is to address the needs of First Nations entrepreneurs, First Nations survivors who have emotional, mental health, and addiction issues. And then we need to be supportive of them for the long term. But we also need, you know, to help the entrepreneurs, because, you know, there's lots of First Nations entrepreneurs. And then the elders tell me that we need to have education for the children, and that education has to be revolved around reconnecting First Nations youth with the land. And then we also, the chiefs have told me, because I've talked to chiefs and I've talked to spiritual Anishinaabe healers, because I belong to a sweat lodge, Anishinaabe sweat lodge, and I listen a lot. And the chiefs tell me that they need to have the same level per capita funding for their First Nations students in First Nations communities as the Francophone and Anglophone schools children get. So, you know, anyways, there you go. That's a big mouthful. But essentially, you know, I have a lot of insight and a lot of concern about First Nations ecology and affordable housing. So that's why it's relevant for Toronto Center.
You've mentioned a lot of factors of what's been changing a lot in Toronto Center, or a lot of key issues that have to be addressed. So right now, you know, Toronto Center has been a Liberal stronghold since 1993. Why do you believe that voters believe they would want change now?
I think, you know what, I think that their grip will loosen as people like myself come down and expand the conversation, because really they've had a pretty exclusive run on this riding, and they haven't had challengers, you know, like myself. I mean, if you put me up on the stage with Marcyine, I know that she's a broadcaster, but you know, I could really put a good counter to her usual liberal line that they come out with. You know, could go, you know, this just generalized, move forward with us. And so they just need to be challenged with people like experience, because I got a lot of experience. And, you know, I think a lot hard about this stuff. And I'm not afraid to go against the grain. And I think people are just sort of sick to death of politicians that all sort of sound the same, because they're afraid of offending anybody. But, you know, I got some pretty strong messaging. I'm talking about immigration, and I'm talking about decreasing our meat consumption. Those are pretty strong messages. And I'm talking about, you know, affordable housing, looking at decreasing the demand, not just building supply, because the supply building takes a long time, and it never seems to catch up to the demands. So, I mean, these are messages that, you know, you're not hearing them for the most part. I think that's one reason why I think that any party can be pried away from their riding. It just depends on the messaging of the opposition. But let's face it, Daniel, I mean, I'm a big boy and you're a big boy, and we both understand that the Liberals and the Conservatives have been running this country since 1867 and prior to that, before Confederation. And so, you know, they're entrenched. It's like the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, they have a crappy team that year in, year out, but people still go and go and watch the game. Right. So they need a little competition, and they need good competition, but it takes a lot of money and a lot of time to compete with them, because a lot of people don't have the energy to sort of sit down and listen to anything complex in response to the typical liberal and conservative message.
What are some final things you'd like to talk about with your party and talk about your platform that you would like to leave for voters as we get towards the election?
I would like them just to realize that what goes on in this riding and outside of this riding affects this riding, and what goes on inside this riding affects outside of the riding. So a lot of people think, you know, well, how do I have an impact on, you know, mines in northern Canada or lumber, you know, the cutting of forests or greenhouse gas emissions or farms? Well, it's because we're related, right? So demand here affects the countryside. And what goes on in the countryside, so, you know, declining amount of forests, declining wetlands, increased intensity of farming and pollution of our lakes and our waterways affects us here. So, and the carbon that we put up in the atmosphere here and the demand we put on carbon emitting thermoelectric plants and, you know, our vehicles affects the atmosphere, and it affects beyond here. So the forests north of here are affected by the increase in temperature, and that's what's happening with all the forest fires out in BC. So what I would really like them to realize is that, you know, this is not like Toronto Centre is not the center of the universe. We're connected to beyond, and beyond is connected here. And that's the nature of ecology. So that's probably what I would really like them to think. And I would also like them to think that, you know, we have to learn to adjust our business model so it lives within the ecological constraints. But we also have to realize that we need to be more productive and produce more interesting products that aren't so material oriented and so energy intensive. So we need a strong business class and entrepreneurs that are well trained and producing products that are sustainable and recognize that we have a finite ecology. And because we need to have a strong economy. Otherwise, how are you going to pay for the hospitals and the expensive procedures that go on in a hospital? Like, you know, like apparently one COVID patient in his ICU generally costs around $25,000 a pop. Well, that's a lot of money. So where does the money come from? It comes from our economy. You know, and you can only print so much money. You can't just keep on printing money because it causes inflation, and also then foreign investors don't want to invest here because, you know, they're thinking, well, Canada's a nice place to be, nice people, pretty stable, but, you know, it's like they got a lot of debt. And if you look at the accumulated debt between the municipalities, the provinces, and the federal government, we have a very high debt per capita. And that's what foreign investors look at. They look at Canada, well, they're not all that productive. You know, productivity gains are not that great, especially if you consider our population is growing by 1% a year. So productivity gains is like 1.5% or 1.6%. We're only 0.6% more productive because we've added 1% more people. So we have to learn to be more productive, and so that means that business people, entrepreneurs, have to be. They have to be encouraged a little bit more and respected, and not to let them get away with being, you know, mistreating their employees or mistreating the environment. But we have to let them. We have to give them the tools they need to do what needs to be done to answer the problems from the future and to keep our economy strong.
That was Peter Stubbins, the Animal Protection Party of Canada candidate for Toronto Centre. I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative.